This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Welcome to Greg Cody Tuesday. We will get to the college football stuff in a second because it's anarchy, it is chaos, and as fascinating as everything is there, and there is a lot of fascinating there, there is one question that I don't believe people are asking nearly enough. And I believe is being undercovered, and I believe is at the top of this mountain of mess. And that question is, who the hell is in charge? Who the hell is in charge? We will get to that in a second. It doesn't have an answer because the states have seceded from the union. Politics has seeped into everything, and it is simply crazy when we've arrived in a place, to God's, where Nick Saban is making the argument, hey, football is healthier for your kids than anything else. And it's like, what the hell are we doing?
I think for now, though, Nick Saban is in charge. I do.
You have reached an unbelievable place in terms of the state of your mental and physical health when the coaches are arguing, and they might not be wrong. Your players are healthier playing football than they are running around in our unsafe American streets.
Look, I'll admit it. I'm selfish. I want to see college football. And I was watching Scott Frost, the head coach at Nebraska, his press conference, Nebraska being reportedly one of the two Big Ten programs.
A total mercenary. Yeah, we'll go 6-7 anywhere you want to put us.
Yeah, just put us anywhere. We're going to play. And I was nodding along as someone that wants to gamble on and watch college football, and he made the argument for health and safety using football.
Yes, it's amazing. It's crazy.
Well, that's what all the coaches, that's their argument. Nick Saban made the same one. Jim Harbaugh made the same one. They're all making the argument that, hey, playing college football in a controlled environment with coaches and doctors around is – you know, they're less likely to get sick in this environment than they are just going about their normal daily lives, you know?
Well, here's the thing about that, though, Stugatz, because, yes, I could actually form the argument. I can assemble the argument. Hey, if I allow these coaches to take even more freedom away from these players than they already do because the players are helpless – yes, maybe I can form the argument that these coaches can keep these players safe than if they return to impoverished neighborhoods, if they don't have testing, if they don't have doctors. There is, however, one numerical problem with that argument.
Right. And the data, it's not easy to find because no one's making them report this, right? But the University of Alabama making the health and safety argument. Well, at one point, they had positive cases in the teens. At one point, LSU had to quarantine 30 players.
Clemson
had 37 positive cases at one point. So when you're using, look, we have structure, we can take socioeconomically, we can put these players in a better place where they won't catch this virus. And it's Clemson telling me that. No, yes. If I walk past that Clemson weight room, I'll get it. You can't use that as an argument if you're Clemson.
All right, it's chaos, and we'll get to the meat of it in a second because you've got Trump siding with young black labor. Hashtag we want to play is what he is tweeting because politics, like on August 17th, ESPN wants to go to sports, playoffs start, sports, and politics keeps coming to sports because now you've got this weird thing where it's broken along political lines. And Stugatz, what I'm being told is because the ACC and SEC want to play so badly, they only need one other conference in order to actually get this off of the ground. I think the Big Ten ends today, even though James Franklin and Harbaugh are out there arguing. I think we're pretty obviously headed toward the Big Ten ending today, at least in part, because I know this part gets missed all the time, Stugatz, as people talk about, well, young people don't die. I mean, the Big Ten has had some athletes have heart issues because of this. And so are you willing to risk that to play college football? Are you willing to risk an athlete having heart issues for the remainder of his life? Because I think there were 5 Big Ten athletes who were shown to have heart issues.
It's also unknown as to whether or not they'll have it for the remainder of their lives. It's also unknown whether that is strictly, coincides with playing sports and athletics, how long it lasts for exactly. And that was part of it. The unknown. There's so much uncertainty and so much unknown with COVID-19 as it relates to everyone, not just athletes, that people are uncomfortable moving forward with a sport like football. But Dan, I will tell you from the kid's standpoint, I do believe this factors in. When you hear Trevor Lawrence and other prominent college football players saying they want to play, when you go to a college, when you go to a university, you play college football, you become friends with all the other athletes, okay? They know the importance of them playing a season because it helps their friends out who play spring sports. It helps their girlfriend out. It helps their friend out. It helps whomever out. And they know if they don't play, they're going to seriously affect those other sports and their friends.
That's all well and fine. I do find it funny that this is the one that we're willing to listen to the athletes on, not being compensated. This is the time when it aligns with our interests of wanting college football. Hey, the athlete's voice, it's important, and he cares about his friends, and so do I. No, you don't. You care about Colorado +9 against Colorado State, Stugatz. That's what you care about. You don't care about enlarged hearts. You don't care about health, coronavirus, the friends of Trevor Lawrence. You care about chasing the Hawaii rainbows on Saturday night.
Look at Danny Cannell's Twitter account. I was pleading with us, please listen to the players. And then once the players started laying the groundwork for a union, then we stopped
listening to the players. Cody, what do you have on this? Because I wanted to get into last night's Heat experience because there are a number of funny things from that. But what do you have on the subject that we're discussing? Because college football is teetering on the brink, and there are a number of fascinating elements here, not the least of which is, to me, I don't see anyone in charge. Like, it's just, is DeSantis in charge? Who the hell is in charge?
Yeah, Stugatz mentioned all the uncertainty and doubt, and you err on the side of caution. That's pretty obvious to me. And my barometer, with all due respect to Nick Saban, my barometer is always, what would Anthony Fauci say? And here's what he said. He said that for college football to be safe, it has to be played in an enclosed community. That doesn't include travel and airports and airplanes and hotels and other stadiums. And so there's an inherent risk that's undeniable. And that's just, you know, the head of the NFL Players Association called football a perfect storm for virus transmission. And he's right. It's the ultimate contact sport where we're not supposed to have contact. It's going to be impossible to play football without an inherent risk. And think, you know, the Big Ten right now is the adult in the room. The presidents are saying, you know what, we're going to have abundant caution here, even at the expense of revenue. I love that.
You say all of that, Greg, but the issue here, as you mentioned Fauci as a governor, the governors are discrediting Fauci. The White House is discrediting Fauci. All of this stuff has become a literal political football where the ACC and the SEC, by region, by state, are saying, yep, Georgia and Florida, bleep it. We're going and we're doing it no matter what. We don't care what the numbers show scientifically. We will discredit facts and scientists and more informed projections. This thing is so soaked in politics as politics and money in a way that's just mesmerizing. It's just politics and money. It is never laid this bare, Stugatz, in sports. The idea of, here's the cost on the human body. Here is the literal moneyed cost on, are you willing to risk the enlargement of your heart? How much does that cost me? Can I pay you in books? Can I pay you in education? Hey, kid, give me your heart. I'll give you a library card and some meals. It's rarely bare naked like this in front of you, Stugatz. It's just politics and money. And what about human decency? What about humanity? What about the literal human heart? I thought Tony La Russa was too old to be getting a tattoo. Put it on the poll, please, Anthony, at Lebatard Show. Is 103 too old to be getting your first tattoo?
Wasn't Rick Pitino 900 when he got his first one?
A tweeter writes in, well, as expected, a topic about college football. Dan Lebatard makes it about race. Damn, ESPN, do you not have any shame? Hashtag race baiting at its best. Hashtag Disney.
Is that guy?
We will get to Greg Cody's Back in My Day in a moment, Stugatz. And we have to get into everything that happened with that Heat game last night that Stugatz was a part of front and center. But I just am always fascinated, Stugatz, and you know this, about the way that sports evolve and how quickly during our lifetimes here, just recently, basketball realized, everybody at the same time, whoa, that two-point shot we've been taking, super inefficient. Let's do threes. Let's do it that way. That's a better way to play. Everyone realized that at once. Baseball for a while now has been doing these shifts that make it very frustrating for me to what used to be a line drive up the middle for a single is now just always going right into the second baseman's glove because the science has evolved so much in that sport and the scouting. But not only has that evolution been something that happened recently enough in our time, the thing that is jarring to me about watching baseball now, it might be the most jarring thing for me. Growing up, when a dude hit an opposite field home run, it was a testament to that man's strength, and it was always some giant dude was the only guy who could do it. Now I'm watching baseball all the time, and I think it's a fly out to right field, and it goes 40 rows deep because everyone can go opposite field in a way that is just totally absurd and is the reason for these shifts because everyone's trying to yank the ball out of the park as hard as they can.
Oppo boppo. I mean, that's, you know, you're right. It used to be like, it used to be a big deal. It was only reserved for like the Greg Luzinskis of the world. And now it seems like you're right. The eight hitter on any team can do it. You're 100% right. It's frustrating. It's annoying. It used to be unique and now it's common. I mean,
it's just an evolution that happened very fast. Like that was baseball is slow to evolve. It took 100 damn years before it happened, but then it happened. They all realized at the same time, wait a minute. So I can take all four bases or I could do this one at a time and try and steal them and bunt and just really grind it out. Like, I could play this sport super constipated, or I could just have this wonderful nutritional system that is perpetually putting out 450-pound rocket shots to right field covered in feces.
Math changed all the sports at the exact same time. Certain sports for the better. I think it took football a little adjustment period, but now it's super fun watching guys like Patrick Mahomes just go deep and abandon the running game. But in baseball, maybe the math made it a worse product.
Then there are guys like Ricky Henderson, Dan, who can go oppo boppo. He can pull away and then also give you a swipe 100 bags. I mean, Ricky Henderson might be the greatest baseball player to ever live. When you really think about it and break it down, he might be the greatest all-around baseball player of all time. I ain't joking.
Put it on the poll at Lebatard Show. Is Ricky Henderson the greatest baseball player of all time? Certainly a great deal of fun, but I'm guessing that the metrics probably don't support him being better than Mike Trout, given that when Ricky Henderson led off the game with a home run, we were all like, wow! And now every single guy in the big leagues can lead off a game with a home run.
He would bat third now, Ricky Henderson, right? Like, someone would have figured that out, correct?
I mean, I don't know. I've got to look.
Probably second. That's the way things are going now.
Yeah, I've got to look at his advanced metrics. He's a Hall of Famer by any definition, but I don't think a lot of people would be making the argument for best baseball player ever. Time now for Greg Cody's Back in My Day.
And now it is time to take a trip down memory lane. Here's your guy, Greg Cody, with Back in My Day.
Unmute your microphone, Greg. Please unmute your microphone. He can't even hear me. Oh, for
man,
the love
he's
of
really
God.
Searching for that unmute.
Oh, okay.
He put in the chat that he can't hear anything, so I don't know what's going on.
Oh, wait, he's unmuted, though.
Greg, you're unmuted. Oh, never mind. Let's just go to commercial. What did I just tell Mike? Let me figure out a way to get Cody involved in the show now. He's just staring at us. He's just it's just so bad. It's unbelievable, Stugatz. Like,
chunkier.
It's getting harder and harder every week to do this show with him.
I just noticed in the comment box, he did tell us lost audio can't hear, but before that, he sent yes! Exclamation point.
Best baseball player ever? Yes! Oh, you mean...
I love how he could hear the whole segment to contribute that. But then as soon as you tee up back in my day, gone.
All right.
No audio.
We will try to get this up and running in the next segment.
Maybe just having Greg in the chat room would be a better Greg, where he could just type things like, yes, we can react to him.
We could just read what he's saying. Now he's just left the room. It is unbelievable. Like, you couldn't be this bad on purpose. I'm telling you, you couldn't get in our way on purpose as well as he does every Tuesday by accident.
Pay that man his money.
I love him.
So just to recap, just so you understand, the first time he spoke on the show was to say yes, and now we can't even get that out of him, but we got yes. So far, in 45 minutes, we've gotten yes and yes out of him, and he's going to be paid for this appearance on radio. Yes and yes.
And yes was in the written form.
Yes.
In the comment box. How is this my fault? I can't hear anybody, but literally everyone else in the Zoom can hear, right? By a show of thumbs up. You can all hear, so yeah, it's on you, Greg.
Who else would you like us to blame it on? Greg Cody, you're the only one around your microphone. You're the only one. Oh, never mind. It's unbelievable. I mean, it's hard enough to do this show without him getting in the way of everything. That Kuzma game winner is so funny, Stugatz. When you watch the highlights on this, watch how many guys, how many Nuggets went with LeBron to the other side of the court, because it was about 40 of them. It was Allen Iverson. It was Carmelo Anthony. It was the Nuggets from the past. There 40 guys went with LeBron, and nobody was paying any attention to Kyle Kuzma. In the history of decoys, it rarely works better than that, where LeBron just went to the other side of the floor, a bunch of Nuggets went with him, and he immediately held up his arm in triumph because Kuzma got a wide open three.
I am looking at it in a second here once it gets to the end. I did not see it last night, nor did I see the highlight, because I was for me, I was up late with the Heat Pacers as a virtual fan, so I need to get some sleep. But I'm watching it actually right now.
We will get to that. We will get your reaction to that in real time. We will just hear it. But let me set up some sound as we embark yet again on trying to get to Greg Cody's Back in My Day. If you're just joining us, rarely has Greg Cody had more of a disastrous hour than the one that he just had with us. Greg Cody has lamented publicly before on other shows that they treat him with respect and he is able to unspool thoughts and tapestries that make him sound more professional than he ever sounds around here on Tuesdays. So if you want to check out the latest Greg Cody show with Greg Cody featuring, oh, you saw it. It's amazing, right?
All he did was cut.
That's right. The Nuggets would have followed him into the parking lot. They would have left the bubble with LeBron if he had just kept running over the line. Like, they all went running with it. It's unbelievable.
You're right. Like, Fat Lever went with him. Yeah, Dan Issel.
So the Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody is a podcast where you can find Greg Cody featured, and it is really self-absorbed, and it is really narcissistic. But the sound I'm about to play for you from that podcast is particularly hurtful when you think of the first hour of this radio show and Greg Cody desperately wanting to be taken seriously as he laments what he doesn't like about being on the Dan Le Batard Show with Stugatz featuring Greg Cody on Tuesday.
I do want to say stuff I don't like so much, because no job is perfect.
Oh, well, hold on. Let me get some dramatic music. Okay, go ahead.
I don't particularly enjoy the hard net workout thing. I'm going to be honest with you.
Really?
I know it's good for the show. I know
it's
listeners
good for
love
you.
It.
That is such a BS. See, I'm going to fight you on all these.
Okay. I just wish, And this sort of segues into my other thing that I don't particularly like. I just wish I had a little more breathing room to not just play the caricature, the musty old columnist, the buffoon to be made fun of. Honestly, I've told you this before. A big reason why I wanted to start a podcast is to show what I think is a fuller version of myself than is seen and heard on Tuesdays.
All right. First of all, my advice to you just generally would be better. But okay, if you want to ignore that and you want more Greg Cody as a maximum professional, why don't you tell us who your guests are on the Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody this week? Show us your true journalistic side and how it is you make things interesting to people with breathtaking artistic work. Who are your guests on the Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody?
Well, there's a guy in the Fort Lauderdale area running for local office. He's running for supervisor of elections. And I find out that this guy also is a screenwriter who has a movie on Netflix right now. I thought that was an interesting combination. Is he a screenwriter dipping a toe into politics? Is he a politician who just happened to write a movie? So we talked to him. That was pretty interesting. And we talked to the author of a new book called The Wax Pack. And as a guy who grew up collecting baseball cards, I found the premise of the book fascinating. This guy went on an 11,000-mile odyssey to try to track down all 15 guys from a certain 1986 pack of baseball cards. So both of those were obscure interviews with guys nobody's ever heard of, but both very interesting.
Now, if that wasn't enough to get you to tune in to this week's Greg Cody Show, he also does this week the Mount Gregmore, which is his version of the Mount Rushmore. This week is the Mount Gregmore of Greg's.
Is that what it is? His version of Mount Rushmore, but with his face. Okay.
Spoiler alert, but Gregory Peck has to be on there.
All right, let me backtrack for a second, because our way of promoting things is often to mock them. So just to be clear, this is a memory I have. It is distinct. Greg Cody, once upon a time, was talking about wanting to write a book, and he wanted to title that book 1440 and have it be reported, the history of a house, his address, 1440, I talked to everyone who had ever lived in that home, and he's relaying this idea to me. And over a table over, Stugat, eating dinner quietly, is embittered Minneapolis sports columnist Tom Powers, who mutters under his breath, "That sounds duller than dog bleep." The Greg Cody Show featuring Greg Cody. Is he a politician? Is he a screenwriter? I don't know. Who is he? I don't know.
Can't wait to find out.
Time now for Greg Cody's Back in My Day.
And now it is time to take a trip down memory lane. Here's your guy, Greg Cody, with Back in My Day.
Sandwiches. The good old sandwich. It got away from us. It was simple once. Sandwich knew what it was. It was ham and cheese, peanut butter and jelly, grilled cheese, a burger. Simple, nothing fancy. Nowadays, we've tried to turn the sandwich into the work of culinary art it was never meant to be. We've draped a lunch pail man in an Armani suit. Plain bread was fine. But now it's a ciabatta roll or a brioche bun. Ketchup or mustard did the job, but now it's aioli sauce. I don't even know what a sandwich is anymore, but I know what it isn't. It isn't a hot dog. A sandwich has bread on the top and bottom of what's inside, whereas a hot dog's bread is on either side of the meat. Merriam-Webster and the USDA erroneously say the hot dog is a sandwich, but you know who knows better? The prestigious National Hot Dog and Sausage Council itself recently separated, ruling the hot dog was its own food type, apart from, and by false implication better than, the amorphous sandwich. Other foods that are not sandwiches include tacos, gyros, burritos, chicken with waffles, and the king of the gastronomic oxymoron, the open face sandwich. Boy, I can tell you the namesake of the sandwich. John Montagu, Great Britain's fourth Earl of Sandwich, would not approve of the modern complication of his design because sandwich in the 1770s created the sandwich for its very simplicity. The English aristocrat ordered a minion to hand him meat between slices of bread so he could eat with one hand while simultaneously playing cribbage. Sadly, Lord Sandwich was a complicated man, sort of a louse, to be honest. In his time, the statesman was considered incompetent, corrupt, a degenerate gambler. His first wife went insane. His second was murdered by a jealous suitor. While across the pond, Tom Jefferson and those guys were signing the Declaration of Independence, Sandwich was in the Hellfire Club, where British aristocrats partook undercover of immoral acts of debauchery. In summary, the guy who invented the sandwich was a pretty bad person, but he knew what he liked, wanted, and needed between slices of bread. Let's honor a most dishonorable man by dialing back the sandwich to its origin and luxuriating in what we never do anymore, luxuriating in simplicity. Give me ham and cheese and a smear of mustard between bread, please. As for that so-called open face sandwich, the only open face I want in the vicinity of my sandwich is my gaping maw as I wolf down the perfectly portable delight before me. I'm Greg Cody, and that's how it was back in my day.
That was excellent.
Oh, standing.
That was
standing. Oh, yes. 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 Confidence from Cody. Yes.
Wow. Incredible.
Yes. A successful segment following Yes, Yes as his only contributions to the first hour. Put it on the poll, please, Tony. Has the sandwich gotten away from us? Yes or no at Le Batard Show.
Pay that man his money.
Yes or no?
Yeah, put it on the poll that way. Yes or no? Has the sandwich gotten away from us? Yes or no?
Ron McGill coming up noon Eastern on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. It's that time of year. The NFL is almost here, and ESPN Fantasy Football is around the corner. Draft your team, compete with your friends, and take home the crown. Sign up now at ESPN.com/fantasyfootball. Here's your SportsCenter update. The New York Rangers won Monday's NHL draft lottery in the right to select consensus number one pick, Alexis Lafreniere. The Mountain West is postponing its fall sports season because of concerns surrounding the coronavirus pandemic. And finally, Stephen King never cashed the $5,000 check he received in exchange for movie rights to The Shawshank Redemption. Instead, he framed it and mailed it to the movie's director, Frank Darabont, with a note that read, "In case you ever need bail money, love, Steve." The UFC heavyweight title is on the line when Stipe Miocic, I think, and Daniel Cormier.
Yesterday you got both those names wrong and then stumbled over the word either complete or compete.
I did, yeah. Did I get anything right here?
I think you made Miocic. I think you made him somebody who was vastly more foreign than he actually is.
He's from Cleveland.
Right. Oh, did I get Daniel right?
Yes.
They complete their trilogy at UFC 252 on ESPN Plus. UFC 252 is exclusively available to ESPN Plus subscribers for $64.99. Visit ESPNplus.com/PPV for more details. For all the latest headlines and information, tune in to SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
Tony, put this on the poll, please, at Le Batard Show, just like this. Might as well cancel the college football season if you're going to eradicate the Hawaii Chaser. Yes or no? If you're going to get rid of the Hawaii gambling chaser, should you just be done with the whole season? Because we need that Hawaii gambling chaser at 1 a.m. when you're betting second half of Hawaii San Diego State.
It's not November without the Hawaii chaser. I need this in my life.
I need to say here, before we get into everything that happened with the Heat and Pacers last night, I just do need to say to the audience, lest you think that I'm, gas bag who thinks he knows it all. Be clear on college football. I would not want to be making those decisions. These are not decisions that I would want any part of. It's very easy for all of us to get on television and tell everybody else what they want to do. I wouldn't want near any of these giant decisions. They seem fraught with all manner of peril. But if you force me to think about how I would attack those decisions, I would have to err on the side of caution because I would be afraid. And you can argue you shouldn't be governed by fear. I would be afraid of damaging a young person's life needlessly.
I would as well. Who would want to be a part of these decisions? They're impossible decisions to make because there's so much unknown. But I would say, Dan, the messengers, which a lot of people are crushing the messengers in this particular case. I think you guys are laughing at the fact that I said who would want to be a part of this when you know damn well that I would want to be a part of making the decision to play college football or not. But the messengers here, Nick Saban and Jim Harbaugh, are two guys who they love money. They don't need the money. More so than any other college coaches, they are laying out the health benefits for their kids. Harbaugh played in the NFL, coached in the NFL, and makes a lot of money. Nick Saban coached for the Dolphins and makes more money than any coach in college football history. They're not driven by money here. There may be some ego, but it's certainly not money, I don't think.
Sugats, you can always make more money. That's an absurd take coming from you. And I think the larger point, Mike,
I'm saying if there are two coaches who could deliver that don't need the money, those are the two coaches right there, I think.
I mean, tell that to their agents that negotiated those contracts. But I do think the larger point of this not being an envious position, the decision maker and all this is absolutely right. I don't envy that position. I just have no idea who occupies it.
It's impossible not to see those, Stugatz, because you mentioned Saban and Harbaugh. Keep going higher on the ladder because the symbolism of this as it becomes a political fight is interesting. Of course, rich people like the president of the United States don't mind putting more disposable bodies at risk, even though they have plenty of money. Like, you don't have to stop at Saban and Harbaugh. Go all the way up the chain. This is what's happening in America right now. It's not college football. Again, sports is always just a symbol for this crud. Like, we're in the middle of the modern-day civil rights movement. Look at your NBA games. Look at what the players have on their uniforms. We're in the middle of this. Climb up all the way to the top of leadership in this country, and you will find the symbolism of course, I will use your body for my gain. Look at what's happening in America to try and get reelected. Like, look at it. You don't have to pay any attention closely to see what's college football is a drop in this bucket. We're spending a lot of time talking about it, but this goes up all the way up the leadership ladder.
It's become part of the platform. And even in the tweets, carefully worded, the student athletes have been working hard. All of this is politics.
It's crazy that it's this infected, that everything around us is this infected, and it's only going to get worse the next 3 months. So let's talk about something a little bit lighter. I can't imagine how jealous Greg Cody was yesterday that Stugatz and Pablo Torre and my father were all on the virtual board there of the Miami Heat game against the Pacers as the Miami Heat decided to erase TJ Warren.
I was jealous at first, but then during the local hour, we were talking about it, and Stugatz was telling me some of the complications and some of the stuff that didn't sound like a lot of fun. So now I'm sort of second guessing. I wanted to buy a pipe. I thought it would be a funny visual for me to be pretending to smoke a pipe when they showed me on the screen, if they did. But now I think I'll go the lazy route and just say, nah, let's not do that.
I don't think you'll get on the television screen. And you have no idea when they're going to put you on screen, when they're not. Like, I was holding my dog, Finney, for a while and didn't get on screen. And then
what's funny about that, actually, Stugatz? This is what's funny about that. I was watching last night, and my wife walked past the screen, and the only thing she saw was a white dog. She's like, there's a white dog on the screen. Crazy. I didn't know that was Finney, and I didn't know that you were behind that white dog because I couldn't see your face.
It was Finney. And then, you know, listen, I was on the local broadcast. First off, there are no signs, guys. Secondly, like, I tried to get, like, the heater at TJ away. The J in TJ stands for Jordan. Like, I had 45 on any given night. They're not going to put you on. Maybe the national telecast, maybe. But there are no signs. It was a bit tricky, intimidating, exhausting, just getting on to the thing and then learning how to use the thing once you were on it. But once I learned how to use it, and I was able to pin the game on the right side of my screen and see my entire section on the left side of my screen.
You are so old.
Which took me to... No, but here's the thing, Dan, and this is the part that's going to surprise you. No one is more conditioned to be able to use this thing and use it well than the young, smart, talented Pablo Torre. And he was equally as confused as I was. So I'm not certain if this is the future. I have no idea what it is. I see the potential for it, but Pablo was struggling with it just as much as I was.
Okay,
that's all I can tell you.
This is what I saw, okay? When I tolerated a pretty bad shooting basketball game in order to get my few seconds of Stugatz, which the Heat evidently at the end just threw you in because they realized that no one had seen any of you, so they just threw it to you and Pablo Torres, where you were on the screen. But when I did see you, Stugatz,
yeah,
the camera was on you, and what I saw staring back at me was sad sleepiness. Like,
yeah,
you were not the face of enthusiasm.
No,
you were not Heat passionate. You just looked unbelievably sad and sleepy.
Tired, stressed out from trying to log on. It's the first Heat game I've stayed until the end. There was a lot going on there. I was pretty drained, and then Pablo made me do a podcast. I mean, I'm going to be on the daily. Pablo made me do a podcast in the fourth quarter. I mean, exhausted, man.
All right. We will talk more about the chaos that was last night next.
Paid that man his money.
Also, by the way, Matt Barnes says that Devin Booker could win it all in the bubble.
Oh.
The Suns haven't lost in the bubble yet.
Okay.
The Suns are unbeatable in the bubble. Matt Barnes has them winning the title. Could win it all. Okay. The telephone number is 786-456-4837 if you want to talk to Ron McGill of Zoo Miami. If you have any animal-related questions, 786-456-4837. Let's get to as many as we can quickly because it's a very popular segment. Damon, you're on with Ron McGill of Zoo Miami. Go ahead, Damon.
Yeah, I have a terrier who watches TV. Now, if I'm watching sports, he's bored. But if there's animals, he'll bark and run at the TV and bark. Now, my girlfriend's dog doesn't even see the TV. Why is it that my dog can watch TV?
You know, dogs are as different as people are. Some dogs take their one thing, some dogs take their other things. Now, terriers, as a breed, are very inquisitive, very high-energy dogs. So, you know, you're probably getting a quicker reaction. I don't know what kind of dog your wife has, but that terrier breed, generally speaking, terrier breeds are very active, very high-strung. So he's probably seeing something that he recognizes there as something. There's a trigger there that obviously is getting him going. There are a lot of animals that respond to that.
What is the smartest of the dogs?
You know, probably a good mutt is probably the smartest of the dogs. But if I had to pick a breed, you know, for me, it's between a Labrador Retriever and a Miniature Schnauzer. Those are my two breeds that I just had some of the greatest days of my life with, and can't say enough about them.
So you're just doing that based on you loved your own animals, or there's some science behind how smart they are?
I don't have a lot of science behind when I say how smart a dog is. Generally speaking, you know, people will say things like poodles tend to be incredibly smart. There's different behaviors, different animals, and intelligence really, it depends on the individual. I mean, it's just like people, Dan. You know, you have some people that are just not the brightest bulb in the chandelier, and then you have others that are geniuses. But they're all humans. It's just individuals. But as a breed, I think I tend to look for things like schnauzers and Labradors. They're just incredible.
Speaking of not the brightest bulb in the chandelier, Chris, what do you have, Chris, for Ron McGill of Zoo Miami?
Ron, do you think it is acceptable for somebody to tell a friend that their dog is not exactly good looking?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I wouldn't call it a horrible name or anything, but you say, listen, you know, I've seen better looking dogs. It's a nice dog, got a great personality. But if you're looking just at looks, listen, you know, there's some better looking dogs out there. Nothing against it, but, you know, I'm your friend, so I want to be honest.
Greg, what do you have for Ron McGill of Zoo Miami?
Ron, I read a very dispiriting headline that
demand for cheetahs as pets is leading to their extinction. Why isn't there an international governing body with the ability to protect animals from this kind of thing?
Well, there is. CITES, the Convention for the International Trade of Endangered Species. Unfortunately, those international laws are only as strong as the individual countries that enforce them. And in these countries, their problem with having with exporting cheetahs to places like Iran and some of the Arabian area, those North African areas, they go out and use them as hunting animals and as pets, and it's horrible, especially in Asia. In Asia, this is a huge problem. It just all goes with illegal drugs, illegal wildlife trade. There are laws to protect these animals. Unfortunately, the ability to enforce them is lax in many countries.
Mike, what did you want to ask Ron McGill?
Totally unrelated to any of the questions you've already heard in this
segment.
Good, because
they're happier, hopefully.
The Whippet, which is a part of the Greyhound family. It's a cute-looking breed, right?
The Whippet?
Yeah, the Whippet.
Yeah, absolutely. High strung, very thin, you know, needs a lot of attention, so it's a fairly delicate breed, but it's a great dog.
Roy, you're on with Ron McGill. What do you have for him?
Ron, what goes into scientifically naming an animal?
Generally speaking, the genus is something that was established long a time ago, and they tend to change them every now and then, especially like in reptiles. Herpetologists are notorious for changing names all the time. As far as the last name goes, it's usually a Latin name that has to do with something, the color of the animal, maybe the person who named the animal, you know, Ross Allen I. There's a snake named Ross Allen I, named after Ross Allen. So a lot of times that second subspecies, the species name is something that is a tribute to someone or in reference to the color or the size, you know, like, Galapagos tortoises, Giosalone elephantophis, because they got elephant type feet. So it all, that second name tends to do more with either honoring somebody or what an animal looks like. The first name is usually a genus from a much bigger family.
Danny, what do you have for Ron McGill of Zoo Miami?
Hi, Ron. What's your opinion on the ethics of dog sledding, both as like a tourism attraction and also whatever productivity they have to offer?
Has dogs what? Dog what?
Dog what's sledding.
Dog sweating.
Sledding. Iditarod.
Oh, sledding. Oh, Iditarod. Yeah. You know, I got to tell you something. I have met those people who work in the Iditarod, and gosh, they really take care of those dogs. They love those dogs, and those dogs really seem to love to work. I mean, they get excited by that. You know, from the outside looking in, I would say, you know what? That's not something I would endorse. But having met these folks who take care of their dogs and the way they take care of their dogs and how healthy those dogs are, I kind of think, you know, that's something that's almost bred into their line. That's something that's part of their blood, that they love to do, and they get excited to do it. And, you know, I wish I could say otherwise, but it seems to be something that is okay. I mean, again, from the outside looking in, I would say, no, you know what, I wouldn't make a dog work that hard because it seems like so much work. But gosh, these dogs love it, and they certainly take care of those dogs.
Just like college football players. Steve, you're on with Ron McGill of Zoo Miami. Go ahead, Steve.
Hi, Ron. Several years ago, I had a bat infestation removed from my attic. Are there long-term health issues I should worry about? And what is science doing to combat white nose syndrome?
Well, you know, bats are probably one of the most horribly talked about animals in the world, and so wrongly so. There's so many misconceptions. They're such important animals, huge pollinators, huge controllers of insect pests. That white nose fungus is something that's gone across the country. It's decimated huge populations. There's all kinds of scientists working on it, but I don't think anybody's come up with any kind of cure yet. They're just trying to control it. As far as them being in your attic, it's not much of a health threat. I mean, bats certainly have potential for carrying rabies, and they produce a guano that is huge. It's high in ammonia. The smell is intense, so that's going to be horrible in and of itself. So that's one reason not to have them in there. But it's not like, to me, it's worse to have an infestation of rats or mice than it is to have bats.
Stugatz, what did you want to ask Ron McGill?
Five pit bulls, Ron, against five African wild dogs, neutral field, who wins?
You know, that's a tough one, Stugatz. I would say by strength alone, it's going to be the pit bulls. But by instinct, because you know, wild dogs, painted dogs, are the greatest team players in the carnivore genus. They are team players as a team, and they're trained killers. I mean, they kill to eat. They kill. So I think as a team, if it was one-on-one, I would go with the pit bull. But at 5-on-5, I'm going to go with the painted dogs.
What a great answer. It really was a great answer. Cody's got an objection to something that happened there during Iditarod. Now he's waving his hands maniacally that he doesn't have a question. Very good, Cody. Thank you for always being present for us and just doing enough to just get in the way at every turn. The orcas, yes, please keep waving your phone at me. That won't distract me at all in terms of doing the radio show. I'm
telling you, the Oliver Platt thing is starting to make sense, and he's starting to grow a little bit of a whiskey nose.
Yeah, yeah. He's also Oliver Fat. Can you please explain to us? Can you explain to us the orcas that were chasing after the viral video of orcas just frolicking, chasing after a boat that seemed to be moving at a very high rate of speed? Did you see this?
I did see it, and you know what? That's just it's orcas playing is exactly what they're doing. You see it done with dolphins all the time. Orcas are basically big dolphins. They're huge dolphins. These animals are so intelligent. They enjoy interacting with things around them. There probably isn't a fisherman in the world who hasn't been out here in the Gulf Stream or out in the bay and had dolphins come around all around their boats and, you know, jump around their boats. These are intelligent animals that enjoy that kind of interaction and entertainment, basically.
Did you know, put it on the poll, please, Tony, did you know that the orca is basically a giant dolphin? Is that right? Like, how? I had no idea that was so.
Yeah, that's basically what it is. It's a huge dolphin.
That's crazy. All right, Ron, good talking to you. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, guys. Take care. Bye-bye.
Pay that man his money.
Chris, can you help me understand what happened with your father that segment where his only contribution is to tell me to look at my phone when I'm busy doing a radio
show? Chris has also aged tremendously during this show and also looks like Oliver Platt.
Chris, what? Stop, Greg. Stop. Please stop waving your phone at me. It doesn't mean anything. Chris, what's happening with your father there?
I mean, apparently now his cursor, like his mouse, is now not moving. It's frozen. Nothing's ever his fault. It's always the computer's fault.
I think he threw something out there about the Iditarod on the chat that he wasn't 100% certain of, and then you went to him, and he didn't want to present it to Ron because he wasn't certain if his information was right. And then the phone was him texting you that, hey, I texted you, don't go to me. That's what happened.
Well said, Stugatz. I don't know what happened to you in the middle of that segment, but you sounded like an Iditarod dog dying in the middle of some
exhaustion. Well, I mean, at least someone's trying to offer up an explanation.
Okay, yeah, I appreciate that the explanation was offered up. Thank you for doing that.
Also, whatever that was, get it checked out.
I just wish you had spoken it like a professional broadcaster. Cody? Stop waving a finger at me like you want to get in here, all right? Take that finger, and I'll tell you where to put it off air.
Whoa!
Stugatz, please tell the people about the sponsor. I need to stop being distracted. He just disappeared from the chat. So Rob Schneider has a new comedy special, Stugatz.
Nice.
It is called Rob Schneider, Asian Mama, Mexican Kids, about his heritage, his own heritage. Now, he's come up through Saturday Night Live and the Sandler movies is where you might know him from. I'm sure he's totally annoyed with the number of people who are just shouting at him, you can do it.
What I'm excited about, though, is during this pandemic, there is so little in the way of new that anytime something new comes out, you get excited for it, you know?
Well, he joins us now. Let's talk to him about, first of all, just stand-up in general. So how did this thing come to be, Rob? Thank you for being on with us.
Well, you know, I was kind of hoping that I could that Netflix would give me a special, and at the same time, the whole world would be shut down, and they'd be forced in their homes, so they'd have to watch it. And I don't hope I didn't jinx the world, but... That just happens to be what happened. Okay. I had nothing to do with it, Dan. Trust me.
How did it, like, I didn't know that you were doing a great deal of stand-up. Like, how did it come to be that you became a stand-up?
Well, I started out as a stand-up. Most people don't even know. That's why I wanted to do this special, you know, and I'm grateful to Netflix for giving me the opportunity. But I started out as a stand-up. I mean, literally, it was like David Spade, Chris Rock, Adam Sandler, and I were all stand-ups back in the mid-late 80s. And then by the time we had about 25 minutes, we were on Saturday Night Live. So I never went back to it, and I always envied those guys, the amazing comedians like Chris Rock and Dave Chappelle, who had that incredible killer hour. But because there's no way to do it unless you're out, you know, in those clubs and hitting it for years to get good at it. So, you know, I did a movie with bunch of guys, and you know, Adam Sandler and David and Chris Rock, and then Chris Rock talked me into doing it again. And so I've been doing that for the last few years, and I finally, you know, I said, well, I want people to see what I'm doing. So
from that group, Rob, like, who's the naturally funniest just standing around? Not sculpted stand-up act, but the guy most likely to make everyone else lose it because everyone else says, yeah, he's the funny one.
Without question, David Spade, without a question. I mean, Adam Sandler is hilariously funny, but he picks his spots. But just hanging out with him, for sure, David Spade. In the history of Saturday Night Live, he's the funniest guy to ever hang out with, without question. I mean, if you ask anybody on that show who's the funniest guy to hang with, and they'll all tell you David Spade.
Do you do a David Spade? Because I was told...
Hey, buddy. Now, David Spade, hey, buddy. Let me tell you about David Spade, buddy. I don't care if you were like, if you were like in the Middle Ages and he'd drop you off, you know, he'd be funny in any era, you know, and Adam's brilliantly funny. He would come up with stuff to make you scream laughter, and then, you know, Chris Rock has this, he'll stew on some idea and then just break it down for you, and it's, you know, blows you away with his intelligence and how brilliant he is and how he can just kind of show the absurdity of life and intimidating in a way, because it's just, you go, man, my mind just does not work that way.
What is the best story you have for us? It's been reported that Sandler basically just goes on vacation with his buddies and you make movies. Like, you must have amazing.
That's the rumor. Wouldn't you want to put that rumor out there about yourself?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He worked his tail off, you know. You know, the idea that, like, you know, Sony Pictures or Netflix, you know, gives you $80 million or $50 million to go, okay, you guys, I'm sure you'll figure something out. Now, there's a real process that you got to go through, scripts and whatever, and make sure you write a real good one and over, and they get the notes and everything. And then only after that do you take all your friends on vacation with you and do a movie. But,
you know. Rob Schneider with us here on ESPN Radio. His new stand-up special is available today on Netflix. When you were doing it, the saddest place you ever did it. Comedy, stand-up I'm talking about.
The what place? I'm sorry?
The saddest place you ever did it.
Why are you speaking like Yoda?
I was just talking to little sound bites there. Just, you know,
I mean,
just
you couldn't have said, did it? What did it meant? Because it sounded like you were asking him the saddest place he's ever had sex.
That's why I clarified. That's why I clarified stand-up.
The answer is both. While I was having sex, the saddest place I ever performed. Sometimes, you know, I think that would have to be, you know, sometimes I do some stuff, shows for the military, and, you know, I was in right after 9/11, we all volunteered and flew over, and we were in Yugoslavia.
Way to go, Guts.
And, the former Yugoslavia, and, you know, it was tough because these kids were over there and, you know, really away from their family, and they were really young. And this one kid said to me, you know, I joined the Army to get a life. And then I came over here and I realized I already had one and I can't wait to get back to it.
It is a tough room. That's a tough room. Like, Bob Saget told us the story of, like, an Alaska strip club where he came out and the woman before him was, like, had pie tins with matches lit on her chest. And he said that was sad, but that's a tough room. War areas, that can't be easy.
Yeah, it's tough. And then, you know, you realize how young a lot of these people are and how they haven't really left home a lot. And here they are. They're overseas and they're really missing stuff. So that's important when you get over there to, you know, they really want to be close to American culture and something that reminds them of home, and they're just basically looking for a laugh and a hug, to be honest.
I was thinking like Alabama, like that's kind of what I was talking about.
Rob Schneider, Asian
no,
mama.
I've had a good time in Alabama. No, come on now.
Asian mama, Mexican kids, if you want to check out the Netflix special. So I was not aware that you do impersonations. So, like, what are your finest impersonations? What are the ones that you're good at?
Well, I don't know. I mean, Jay Moore is the guy who broke the Christopher Walken one. You know, once you have one guy figure it out, then and it's easy. You just know the cadence and how to do it, and then – you can do his voice like that, you know.
Wait a minute. Don't stop doing that, though. Yes, Jay Moore does it great, no, but you do it well. Stugatz does not do it well. Stugatz, show him your Christopher Walken.
You can go on like YouTube now and see like the Asian version of Christopher Walken or whatever, the East Indian version. But I used to watch before there were video recorders. I used to just take a cassette recorder and then you record, old movies and before cable TV. There was I'd record and I'd learn every voice on Casablanca, We said we'd do a great many things last night, and you said I would do the thinking from now on, but I've done a lot of thinking since, and we both know that you belong with Richard. It's part of his work. It's the thing that keeps him going. If you don't get on the plane, you'll regret it. And then all the voices, and then my favorite was Peter Lorre, the fat man, I need to get the papers. The fat man, instead, please, I need the papers. Save me, wait. I want to talk like that guy,
Stugatz, do you think we just nailed the 18 to 34 demo right there? Because that was amazing, but I don't think any of the people who would appreciate it are still alive.
I know. There's about eight people on Staten Island who are told to get all those voices.
Greg is one of them. You have absolutely delighted Oliver Platt. Thank you, Rob. We appreciate your time.
Give my best to Oliver. I really hope he enjoys the special.
Thank you, sir. Anything else on the way out? Do you want to tell us about the special before you get out of here?
Yeah, well, thank you. I want people to know that I was a real stand-up, and that's what I do. And there's so many great ones out there, and I just want people to have a good laugh and forget all the crap that's going on in the world and there's no politics and just have a good one. You know what I mean? Have a good laugh with your family. And I apologize for all the swear words. And thanks, you guys. Thanks for having me on today.
Thank you for being on. Are you urinating right now? Are you going? What? I'm hearing a bathroom of some sort.
I'm making my morning tea, baby.
Okay.
You gotta have it, baby, before the kids wake up and ruin everything. I'm gonna enjoy myself.
You want to have tea with us tomorrow morning as well?
Yeah, we'll talk to you tomorrow. All right, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
I know which voice you want from the 30s.
All right, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have a good day.
This show ain't free. Time for some ads.
You mother bleepers underestimated us. You thought that was going to be bad. You thought it was going to be bad. You were rooting for it to be bad. Bleep off. I can feel you on my neck. Is Rob Schneider going to be on? Why? Really? Rob Schneider? Because he's going to give you some Bogart. 18 to 34. Going to eat some Casablanca.
Whose voice is that? 18 to 34?
I'm just yelling at 18 to 34. You underestimated us. And look, we gave you Rob Schneider. And tomorrow you'll get more Rob Schneider.
Yeah.